Hey guys, this is Cole Liker.
Hi, I'm Neil Collins.
This is Jochen Graf.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
The Unused Substitutes.
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood, I
everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. You are listening to the Unused Substitutes Show. We are your green and gold gospel and your best source for year-round Rowdies coverage. We are live on Radio St. Pete and part of the Beautiful Game Network, presented in part by Roughneck Scarves and Taco Bus. My name is Stephen Cundiff. Joining me tonight is only one co-host. Matthew Cox is here with me. Matthew, sir, can I just say that I hope that you are having a better night than the 510 sailors of the Russian Black Sea flagship Moskva. Because if you did not hear, about a few hours ago, it was rumored that the Russians lost the Black Sea flagship to a navy with no operating, sorry, to a country with no operating navy in a war that they claim they're not in. In about 45 minutes before we went on air, it seems to be confirmed it sunk. How are you doing tonight, sir? How are you? I hope you're doing better than those 510 sailors.
Well, I'm currently breathing and I'm above sea level, so I guess that's a pretty decent start. I will say, as events of the last few days have transpired, I walked into work this morning, and the general like, "Oh, how's it going?" And I said, "Honestly, I've just been thinking a lot about some of the decisions I've made in the last 48 hours." During which time period I have bought a romper that's arriving tomorrow, that I will be wearing on a bus for which ticket I just bought tonight, in order to go to, a place that shall remain nameless, in West Central Florida next Wednesday. So, yeah, I'm better, but I guess you could say overall, probably not by much.
Yeah, I think most of the Rowdies kingdom at this point is kind of just like, we're all kind of excited and I'm kind of like, man, we really actually have to go there next week, don't we? Like, we don't really have a choice. We have to actually go and attend that place, but it's all right.
Yeah. So I'll be, and I was upfront and honest about this before the results of the draw came out. I wanted to host. I didn't care who it was. I wanted to host. I wanted it at Al Lang. That's a lot easier drive. I'm lazy. I'm a simple man. I just wanted it at home. If you had put a t-shirt can into my head, as Dan probably would do if he cared enough about the Open Cup to show up on an episode where we mention it instead of protesting it by sitting out, I would have said, give me Miami, because Miami seems infinitely more vulnerable. it doesn't really matter who we play, but I want to host. I want to get to the next round, and Miami awful football club seems like it would be a good route to go. But I mean, I'm literally here for this, and I guess I'm there for this. I have my ticket. I'm going to arrange my my day off tomorrow. I'm there. I'm going. And I'm ready to have fun. I don't care what happens. I mean, I do care what happens, but I don't care what happens. I'm there to have fun. I'm thinking about this is going to sound like we're shilling for ownership here. The overlord ownership, but the Rays games the last two nights. So two nights ago, the Rays are getting destroyed to the point where they put in the world's greatest baseball player, Brett Maverick Phillips, in as pitcher.
And he's noted Rowdies fan, of course.
Noted Rowdies fan. Let's get him on the bus while we're at it. Save a ticket, Rouse Mob. get Maverick on the bus. They put him in as pitcher. He's getting guys out. He's throwing strikes. He's diving, sliding towards the dugout to catch foul tips. It's an amazing accomplishment. And someone pointed out at the end of the game that years from now, no one's going to remember that the Rays got absolutely destroyed in that game, but they're going to remember what Brett Phillips did. And then last night, Brett Phillips, again, literally, no one's going to remember because there was hardly anybody at the game from the pictures that I saw. But while they're interviewing this young girl who is currently fighting cancer for the second time, her name is Chloe Grimes. She's talking about how she met, like, Brett Phillips is her favorite player. She met him before the game, she signed a softball and gave it to him. Boss move. She gave him one of her wristbands. He says, this is going to bring me luck. He's at the plate, hits a home run while she's being interviewed. They tell him all this happens after the game, that when he hit that, they were talking to her. He's literally choking down tears. It's one of those things like, sure, other places have sold out stadiums and people who live and die for baseball, and we've got a couple thousand that'll show up every now and then. I don't care. Give me that result over a packed stadium and the LA Dodgers spending $73 million a year to buy a World Series trophy. Give me something like that with a player like that. That's fantastic. I want to go up to Orlando. I want to win this game, the second ever truly competitive game, although there have been several other so-called friendlies and exhibitions. At some point, we're going to win that game. And if we're going up there and there's not a lot of expectations probably that we're going to come back with a result based on the difference between the two teams, based on where it's being played, based on prior history, whatever. But to be there, if we win that game for the first time, especially to be there in a green romper with some green and gold accoutrements, that's going to be a hell of a night. Even if, as I might, I absolutely cannot take off work on Thursday. I have to be there. And when the bus gets back to Al Lang, I still got about another 45 minutes before I get home. So, yeah, let's go have some fun. Like, this is one of those ones, even if you don't love the Open Cup, or even if you don't like the Open Cup, or even if you'd rather go to Chipotle before going to an Open Cup game, this is one that you just kind of have to be there regardless of whether it's the Open Cup or not. This is going to be fun.
Oh, what a week we're about to have. If you have not been following social media for the last good week here, you are missing out. It's funny, one observation to make is that, like, nobody's using the I4 Derby hashtags. Like
good. I think it's dumb.
Yeah, you don't like it. That
hashtag. I don't know what it should be, but it shouldn't be that. Like, I get that the whole I-4 thing kind of, it was the when it was the Storm and the Orlando Predators, when it's USF and UCF, this needs to be different. It just needs to be different. I don't know. I don't know what it should be. Shouldn't be that. But let me just say, and this is in all seriousness, because I saw some of this discussion going on too. Orlando City has designated two sections as the away section. They have provided a link for to buy tickets in that section. The Rowdies tweeted it out. I think it was in the Mob Discord too. Yes, you can get similarly priced tickets elsewhere in the stadium. If you haven't been to one of these games before, if you haven't been to a Rowdies Orlando game at Al Lang, especially one several years ago, if you haven't been to Rowdies Orlando games elsewhere, I'm telling you, get a ticket in the away supporter section, because I promise there will be a adequate level of security around that section. They won't know whether they're there to keep us in or to keep them out. But it's everyone's best interest to be in that section. First off, we're going to have the experience of, and this has not happened often, it will not have happened for almost anybody to this extent, of being the most hated people in the section, in the stadium. The chants, the booing, the cursing, the everything. Like, there's a reason they're putting us on opposite ends of the field. Did you see the Nashville fan tweet?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, so good.
It was good. I loved it. I retweeted it. I threw a little something on top of it. It might be a midweek game. It might be an Open Cup game. They may not draw the giant crowds that they were used to when they first moved into that stadium, when they first joined MLS. I have a feeling there's going to be a good crowd that night.
A lot of these
OGs who have kind of drifted away since the club completely changed its character upon going to MLS, especially with new ownership, there's going to be a lot of people coming back, I think, that night for this game, because they want to go get into the stadium with the seats dedicated to the victims at Pulse and scream their homophobic chants at us, because that's a good look. You want to be there because you want that experience of being the one that everybody hates. It's so much fun. It's so choice.
All right. There's so much to talk about. One thing is, we'll talk about this now. Scheduling for the show. We are going to talk probably pretty decent about the Orlando game next week, because we're not on the air next week at all. Because, I mean, you and I, Dan maybe, but definitely you and I. Actually, no, Dan said no.
Yeah. Dan's a no. He can't get time off of work.
That's right. So yeah, you and I, we are going to be there. Dan doesn't have a way of like hosting a show. So we are going to be taking next week off, which means all of our Orlando slander comes in tonight. So I hope you're ready for that if you're listening to this episode tonight or on the podcast here in the upcoming days, because this is going to be the episode, my friends. This is going to be the episode.
Orlando slander? Is that Orlando? Slorlando? What is this Orlando you speak of? I'm only aware of the West Central Florida Aztecs.
It's just this like suburb of Kissimmee or something like that. I don't know. It's,
you're still just the Aztecs to me. I'm glad it got moved to the big stadium. I honestly was kind of looking forward to Osceola County Baseball Stadium, because I felt, put us against them in a converted baseball stadium, yeah, we're going to wreck those guys.
I'm going to say this. I don't understand that take. I don't understand that take. And here's the reason why. We're undefeated at Exploria in actual games, not just like closed door friendlies. But they've beaten us at Al Lang twice. So like, I don't understand the whole take us into a converted baseball. No, we actually do better at Exploria. I don't get, like, I've heard other people say what you said. I don't get it. That doesn't make sense to me. We're better at Exploria.
It has nothing to do with the stadium itself. The fact that they were going to put the game there to, let's face it, limit the number of their fans and our fans who could attend. To create a situation where if it's the first time that they end up losing a game to us, it's not going to happen in the stadium, in you know, the litter box, the line, whatever the crap they call that piece of crap over there.
The litter box, yes.
They don't want that happening in their stadium. You know, they don't want the – if something – God forbid if there's a redo of events from the last time there was a game, this one at Al Lang, that Dan could speak about because he was there that night. They don't want those scenes being in their in the stadium. But enough people on their side and our side bitched about it that they forfeited, I assume, the $200 of their $1,000 performance bond for the Open Cup to change the location after the game had been announced. Like, what's $200 for them? We're paying for that for our tickets, basically. Yeah, no, this is just let's go. Let's do it. Oh, burn the place down. If you want the bus seats are going fast. If you want to get a seat on the bus, look, it's $25. That is a bargain compared to driving yourself to Orlando, paying for gas, paying for parking, walking around that area, trying to get into the stadium, realizing you're probably better off and it's more sanitary at the strip club across the street. And, you know, the bathrooms are better anyway. So, and then not having to deal with the drive back, like just go get in the Mob Discord. They tweeted out the link, get in there, get a ticket, come sit with me on the bus.
It's funny, 'cause I haven't figured out how I'm going to get there yet. All right. So we have a lot to talk about tonight. We know one other person that's very hyped for this game is our Patreon executive producer tonight. That is Mike Pendleton, who has been a longtime supporter of the show. One of the best
on the bus. He's on the bus, people.
He's on the bus, as should you be. If you want to tweet us during the show, our handle on Twitter is at UnusedSubsPod. That's the place to get a hold of us. I love looking ahead. I love looking at what this weekend's going to be and what next midweek is going to be. I don't like dwelling on the past too hard, but we do have to comment on it a little bit. This past weekend, we played Miami. And in a rather unfortunate set of circumstances, unfortunately, we did not walk away with any points.
So I'm going to end up having to defer to you for most of this one. You're going to have to do the glass half empty and half full, because I literally got there at like the 86th minute. I was at a wedding in Ybor. I meant to leave earlier, but well, it was an open bar. And a lot of friends from college were there. So, the reunion went on for a little while, made it there to the stadium in time. Like, I left, walked around a little bit, went the wrong direction to try and find where I'd parked my car, got back in the right direction. I think by the time I got in the car, Miami had scored. And I hightailed it over to Al Lang, walked in the 85th minute.
So, yeah, this game has had a couple of things going on. First of all, we had a little bit, tiny bit of new player type squad rotation going on. Jake Arriman came in and played as a left midfielder. And it was funny because, you know, they were talking about, like, when we found out the lineups, they were like, oh, you know, did you see the fact that, like, you know, Quinzati's not starting? And it's like, yeah, but what are you going to do with Leo Fernandez if you've got Arriman in? Like, Jake had earned his spot in a starting lineup. Like, what we've seen on the field from him so far this year, that was very much, it seemed in some ways to be a bit overdue at times. If you're going to bring him in, what are you doing with Fernandez? So it ends up becoming this question of who's going to end up being the odd man out, Fernandez or Quinzati? Because you knew you were going to have Dos Santos up top, that's for certain. And in this case, it just happened to be that they decided to put Fernandez up top. I think, personally, the bigger surprise is not Guenzotti not starting the game. I think the bigger surprise was Jake LaCava not starting the game and having Juan Tejada be the starter in going into that match. I thought that was a much more shocking choice than anything else. Considering that Jake LaCava has started as one of the hottest goal scorers in the entire USL to start the year, I didn't necessarily understand that decision. And unfortunately, things kind of, sort of, in a really weird way, kind of reflected that. So, first half goes through, it's scoreless. Second half comes in, 51st minute. Miami takes a long-range effort. CJ Cochran makes a save on it. Unfortunately, they follow up on the shot, are happen to be in the right place, right time, and on the follow-up shot, are able to sneak it by CJ. After that, you have a slew of substitutions starting in the 61st minute. We make, you know, the Rowdies go through all five of their subs. But unfortunately, it's not enough. They do go down 1-0. So let's do a quick glass half full, glass half empty. So glass half full is that we did dominate the possession of the match. So as it's tallied right now, you end the game with 65% possession of the ball. In the raw pass count, we had, or were credited for 601 completed passes to Miami's 323. We almost doubled them 2-1 in passing for the match, that's incredible, to be honest. And considering that of the 323 that they had completed, 70 of them were considered long passes. So, you know, this huge proportion of whatever ball control Miami had was just lobbing it up the field. That was the vast majority of what they had. We dominated the vast majority of how that game was dictated. That's my glass half full. My glass half full is the Rowdies aren't going anywhere. We're still one of the best teams in the league. One loss is not going to impact that. So we don't need to panic about this game. That's my glass half full. Glass half empty. I'm going back to the LaCava thing. Because as it stood, we end the night, despite having this like crazy amount of possession, we end the night with only 15 shots in total. And only 2 shots actually make it on frame for the whole night. Now, granted, there's a lot of like blocked efforts in there that get counted separately, but that's not good. That's the type of issues that we had, say, 2 seasons ago, when you had this like dominant possession team, dominant physical team, and we just didn't have people taking shots in the box. And part of that, if you were watching this match, is the Fernandez, Dos Santos, Tejada combination up front for the first 60 minutes that those three guys were on the field together up top. It wildly did not work. It really didn't work. There were moments when, say, Sebastian Dalgard had the ball out on the right wing. And he's looking up, seeing who he can pass it to, who he can cross it to. And, like, both Tejada and Dos Santos are checking in to him out there on the wing. Like, Tejada's almost on the line, basically, and Dos Santos is checking, too, in the middle. But then Fernandez is on the clear side of the other field, still playing like he's a left winger, looking for this, like, deep switch or something. So you end up in a situation where, like, over and over and over again during the game, you had a player not marked on the outside with the ball, ready to cross it, whether it's, you know, in this case, you know, whoever the midfielder was at the time, and there's literally, like, nobody in the box to cross it to. There's just nobody there. Nobody there at all. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of a bummer about LaCava not being on the field is that, like, LaCava likes dribbling through players and likes attacking down the middle. He likes, give me the ball down the middle and I'll attack someone. And you look at, you know, Dos Santos and Tejada, and that's not necessarily who they are. So you just, you didn't really have, like, an edgy player to drive into the box to create havoc. You end up just dancing around it the whole game. And so you don't really get much out of it. And that was at least a semi-perception at times watching that match, was just there was no, there were not enough numbers in the box to make it. I mean, we played that whole game with only 27 crosses. Historically speaking, that's kind of a sort of low number. And in a game when you've got 601 passes overall, that's not a very big number at all. So, like, you just, you could tell that we were very devoid of ideas. And I don't know, maybe some of that's Etu, and he just didn't have a good performance as an attacking mid. That's one reason why he potentially came out in the 62nd minute for Jan Ekra. But it just, I don't know, like, it kind of felt like we were missing a player to have that edge, and it kind of felt like that would have been something LaCava would have done. So that's my glass half empty, was the formation decision. Not the formation decision, but the player decision for how we did our starting 11.
I do kind of have one glass half empty, because it's something I noticed as I was driving up, and I'm driving up to the stadium, and I can see, you know, in, because I'm coming across like from like the Hilton side, and I can see across into the stadium, and I thought, like, man, it looks rather sparse tonight. And I get there, and I realize it's late in the game, and like I said, it's 85th minute. Team's down, hasn't really, you know, created much excitement in the way of chances, it looks like, and then a lot of people are coming out. I saw the next day, and I'm curious about this. The announced attendance was like 4,500 something, 4,900 something.
49,
like it was under
4,947.
Yeah, it was under 5,000, which I the game before, the previous game, was over 6,000, and then we had an Open Cup game that was nearly 3,000, and that was a legit number. That wasn't like a tickets distributed. It looked like nearly 3,000 in the stadium that night. I'm kind of curious, and you know, some of it is probably due to COVID is still a thing, whether people believe it or not, is still a thing. But, you know, the Rowdies typically, regardless of the opponent, usually sell out the home opener. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen this year. And it's certainly not for lack of trying. I see a lot of promotions online. I get a lot of things in emails. I have, you know, season tickets, but we're inside early for the pregame show, and no one ever really scans our ticket. So I get an email every game saying, hey, why didn't you come to the game? Like, what happened? And like there's definitely an outreach there from the ticket department. Like, the effort is there. I'm curious. Like, last Saturday, it was beautiful. I mean, I'm inside this wedding, and I'm kind of thinking, I can't wait to get to Al Lang. It's a gorgeous freaking night to go stand and watch some soccer. And I'm just kind of wondering what's going on there. Like, there are some obvious things, but I wonder if there's some less obvious things also.
So, my counterpoint to that is that 5,000 a game is pretty average for what the Rowdies draw historically in the last couple of seasons when we've had a fully open stadium. 5,000 is pretty average. I believe that's really, really close to what we do. And, I mean, that's like 60% of the building full or something like that. Like, it's still a pretty significant portion. So, you know, the home opener was 5,100. For example. Mm-hmm. So, like, this past week, despite being the third game of the home game of the year, was and only a few days removed from a very well attended US Open Cup game. So, like, again, if we're going to be fair to everything involved here, we had a really good turnout for the Open Cup against the Villages that Wednesday night. So we don't want to knock the, like, things too heavy here, because there's also good things that happened in the last week. But, you know, 5,000 is pretty close. I think, according to Mike's stats, from what I was reading, because I noticed it too. I was like, I wonder what the attendance is going to look like this year, since it seems like everything's kind of starting to open back up completely and most people are feeling good about being out. Like, you know, the CDC doesn't say that you should really have to worry about wearing masks anymore. And a lot of these things are starting to get loose, you know, just at least that's the general like idea that seems to be floating around most places at the moment. We're still up. What? I think it's we're the largest percentage so far this season of fan attendance raised over last year, where it was only like partially open for most of the year. The Tampa Bay Rowdies right now have the largest increase in attendance compared to last year as a percentage for compared to literally everyone else in USL. Now, that being said, we are technically down versus our pre-COVID numbers, the 2019 season. We are short of those marks. But we've also had the biggest turnaround compared to the previous year when COVID was still a partial concern. So there's a lot of, like I said, there's good and bad in the numbers. Things are going to get lower as the season goes on a little bit. I think it's safe to say as the weather heats up, as the rain storms come through and all that kind of stuff, like you're going to see games with probably 25 to 3,000 people in the building. I think it's just kind of a given. As long as you're getting like 5 to 6 in September, that's what matters. So I think this is kind of where it is right now. And, it's part and parcel for a lower division soccer team. You know, it's like we're not going to be a sellout team every single year. Everybody knows who we are. I mean, okay, let me preface this by saying a lot of people know who the Rowdies are. We still find people that don't, obviously. But there's a lot of people that know who the Rowdies are. Just look at, for example, today's... Matt, let me introduce you to somebody named Carol. You see, and this person named Carol writes an email to the Tampa Bay Rowdies talking about, you know, you really shouldn't call yourselves the Rowdies. Do you have any idea what the definition and the different connotations of that word are? You should really consider this. I watch sports, and I can't get behind this because of your name. That tweet, because, of course, that email was very intelligently screenshot and made a tweet by the Tampa Bay Rowdies' main man himself, Jake Nutting. That tweet became one of the most engaged tweets that, like, Rowdy's official Twitter has had in months. Like, I bet that those numbers probably compare pretty heavily to what we were at with the championship stuff, with some of the championship stuff last year. Like, that's one of, like, the most engaged tweets we've had in a long time. People know who we are. Like, it is not that people don't know who we are or the history behind the name, or people that follow soccer even remotely, or people that are Tampa Bay sports fans even remotely, a lot of them at least know who we are. So, you know, when I'm looking at attendance numbers, I'm okay with things right now. I'm not in any kind of like warning flag territory. If we were not at least filling the building by 50%, that's when I'd be worried. But we're still over half capacity, you know, over half full in seating. I'm okay with it as it stands.
Speaking of that tweet, I retweeted it from the podcast account and threw a little salt on it. There have been lots of likes and retweets and whatever, and like names. Like there's some names I'm used to seeing when I tweet something, and then there's some names here that show up, and I'm like, I have no idea who some of these people are. So it's definitely out there. And I will say, like, totally anecdotally, I told you the story about my coworker who asked me to identify somebody in a picture last week. Did I tell you that part? I thought I told you that part. In the DMs. Asked me to identify somebody in a picture, and it was me and Dan talking to Lewis Hilton in the pregame show. So he was at the game with his daughter and her soccer team, and he's going to be back there like this weekend. So, and when I was at the wedding, I had people I, you know, knew that I haven't seen in person in a long time were like, "Hey, we got to go to a game sometime." Like that just seems like a lot of fun. So it's out there. Maybe it was just so nice last weekend. People didn't want to go somewhere. I don't know. Maybe they were out at the beach. Maybe they were out camping. I don't know. Whatever it was. It just seemed odd. And of course, when I'm showing up in the 85th minute, a lot of the casual fans are emptying out anyway at that point. So I was just curious. Something just seemed a little off. And we know literally like talking to the ticket reps, like the stuff we see going on behind the scenes, like they're busting their asses to put people in there and doing a bunch of neat stuff that we haven't necessarily seen in the past. So it'll pay off. It'll pay off eventually. Yeah, so that's kind of bummed. It's so weird though, you know, like the USL tweets this and stuff, you know, in-state rivalries, and like, did losing to Miami ruin your night? Are we going back and forth with the Miami fans, the couple of them that we know, like the hardcore ones on Twitter? Like, no, it was like, oh, okay, well, we'll see you guys next time comes around. Like, Miami's getting some results, but it still doesn't feel like actually a rivalry on either side. How do we change that? We need a trophy. We need a name.
Miami needs fans that are not paid actors.
Are you saying does Miami FC stands for Miami Football Crisis Actor Club?
Yes. That's a perfect name. We should plaster that everywhere. Somebody should Photoshop that immediately.
I mean,
yeah, you can't have a rival with a team that has no fans. That was our problem with Fort Lauderdale, is that we were like trying to make it a rivalry based on the historical brand of it all, and yet like there was no Fort Lauderdale fan base of any significance. You know, it's funny because I always thought it was strange that the year Fort Lauderdale rebranded, like, into the actual Strikers colors, they had that, what was it, their season opener game had that, like, sold-out crowd, right? Because they did the rebrand, and then they had this, like, big, like, free ticket event or something or other, and they managed to have, like, a sold-out park. I will never understand why the NASL chose not to have the Tampa Bay Rowdies there for that game as the team to play against, and instead shuffled us off into a July match or whatever twice that, you know, inevitably always had, you know, afternoon thunderstorms that we'd all have to be delayed for, you know, an hour for, because that was just that, or had games completely rescheduled. That happened once too. Like,
right,
that was a weird marketing choice, because like, imagine if it would have been Tampa Bay Rowdies, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, and a packed out Lockhart Stadium, you know, and just drive that train as hard as you can. I wonder how that would have changed history a little bit, rather than playing like whoever it was, Indy 11 or whatever the team was that they ended up playing that night, San Antonio or some crap, like. It just makes you wonder what that would have done to the trajectory of that club and of the league if that had taken place.
It's almost as if you're saying the NASL did not always make the best decisions in terms of business. Like, like, you know, let's give up our Florida headquarters and move across the street from Macy's in New York. Like, I'm sure that was let's be like a floor down from PRO and next to One World Sports. And that's going to be a wise idea. How's NASL doing these days? Oh,
we always said when David Downs stepped down, we were like, this is just bad. That was the kicker. That was the kicker for that league. Was David Downs. And that was, and again, I mean, I don't want to rehash all of this history lesson because we've all talked about it for 10 years now, but you know, that ended up becoming because he wanted to partner with Major League Soccer in some capacity for development. That was like
he wanted the B teams that USL ended up having.
Yeah, he wanted to do that in the league owners because of the structure of the league, right? Like it was the whole idea was that the league owners could make decisions and that the decisions were theirs, you know, inherently to make and not a top-down decision like USL was. They all said no. And so David was like, well, then I'm going to go on my way. And we all said right then, it was like, because David was 100% like one of the most well-respected people in U.S. soccer at the time. Like, everybody knew who he was. Everybody liked him. So, like, when he stepped away from it all, we were like, this whole thing is just doomed at this point. Like, there's no way this survives. The second nail to the coffin, of course, was when San Antonio left. What was it? Hartman? I don't remember his name. When he sold the club and to the Spurs and they rebranded and moved to USL. That was the other nail in the coffin. Because that was when everything was like, okay, supposedly one of your biggest money guys in NASL are now out. Because that was like a flagship franchise. First one that had its own like properly built stadium for its own team. Like San Antonio Scorpions were like the flagship. But anyways, yeah. You need fans to have rivalries. And so it's really hard because, like, it's hard to have a rivalry with New York Red Bulls, too, because nobody cares about New York Red Bulls, too. It's hard to have a rivalry against Miami FC when nobody cares about Miami FC. It's hard to have a rivalry against Charleston Battery when nobody shows up to Charleston Battery games. Yes, I'm going to call them out, too. Like, it's just... There's a reason why Orlando has always mattered, and it's because Orlando's the only place that ever actually cared to play us. That's the thing. It's not about, like, our hatred of them. It's that we're the only people they ever cared about playing. They didn't care about playing Harrisburg or Antigua Barracuda or...
Didn't care about playing for Harrisburg.
Yeah, well, yes. But, like... You know, they didn't care about their league schedule. Like, playing the Rowdies was the thing that mattered to them. And that's the thing that I've always... That's what always sticks out to me. I mean, that was the thing about the Orlando City B game season opener in 2017 when they had a couple hundred people come over and watch that game.
So that they could fit it into an Orlando off week and send a bunch of their players and their fans down to do it.
Yeah.
Plus, we caged them up on some temporary bleachers that I watched getting bolted together 2 days before.
It was great.
When I was... it was brilliant.
It was the right thing to do. But...
Yeah, oh, it was. That's what they should be doing with us, yeah. Honestly, if we were at the baseball stadium.
Yeah. So, like... And that's what I've... Part of the reason why I've never really understood the whole, like, well, it's not really a rivalry. Based on what? Like, literally every indicator exists. Like, what, did, like, Leeds and Manchester United suddenly become best friends because Leeds went down a couple divisions for a while? No, those fan bases still hate each other's guts. What am I missing here? Like, there's precedent for this all across global soccer. I don't get it.
But, and I think another part of it is, like, even the results on the field... Like, the times that Miami has gotten results, has gotten a draw, or has gotten a win, it's like a 1-0 or, you know, a 2-1 or something. There hasn't been, like, you know, the Rowdies went to Fort Lauderdale when the, like, existence of the club was up in the air and they're playing at a lacrosse stadium and Georgie hits a hat trick. Like, they're, like, big things would happen in those games. They would come, you know, Fort Lauderdale would come over here and the game would get delayed, or... they'd blow a lead and then their fans' bus caught on fire on the way home. Like, there was always something that was part of it. And it's missing all of that. And I don't know, it's the only in-state game we have. And I would like an in-state game to be a rivalry, like an actual league game where we're going to see a club twice a year and maybe in the playoffs. Like, the Orlando game, yeah, it's a rivalry because it's Orlando. There's past history. There's geographical proximity. But I want to hate Miami more. But nothing's, there's been, like, you know, there have been players that have gone from one to the other, but it's not like a bad blood thing. You know, there's just, it's so weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's funny because, like, talking about players that have gone back and forth, look at Tampa Bay and Orlando. You know, there's, I think it's like 7 players, I think, that have played for both clubs over the years. And that goes both ways. Some guys from Orlando ended up with Tampa Bay and vice versa. Like, it wasn't just like a one-way street for that. You know, it's and that part is what it is. I mean, I'm not one of these like Puritans that are like, if you play for us, you should never play for them. I don't care. It's not that important. It's not that important. Let people have jobs. Let people make money where they can make money. I don't care. But it's interesting though. I was thinking about this, about like on the Orlando side, there's, I don't believe anybody left from the Orlando side, even in 2017 for the B team, that's still involved in the organization in some way. So like, as far as I'm aware, the entire Orlando organization for on-field and on-field staff are different. But ironically, there is a couple of connections on the Rowdy side going back to 2017 and going all the way back to 2014. Because Lucky M. Cassano was on the 2014 roster that year, and so he actually was involved with the Rowdies when the I-4 Derby matches were being played the last time we had a chance to play against them. Neil Collins was on the field in 2017 when we were playing Orlando City B. You know, so like, you know, you look at some of these things, and there are people that are connected to the club that are still around the club in general, like in terms of like in principle, obviously. You've got guys like Joe Cole and Georgie Ristov that are still locals to the area that still attend games and support the team and support the guys. And those guys were involved in a lot of those matches. You know, so there's still a lot of local connections within the organization for the Rowdies that have a very fresh memory of sorts to what took place with Orlando and Tampa Bay over the years. Orlando doesn't have any of that, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they went through and you know, a lot of the like exhibitions and preseason games have come since they've moved to MLS, but it's the same colors and it's a similar, you know, design, like crest, whatever. It's a totally different, like, I make the jokes about them being the West Central Florida Aztecs, because they were the Austin Aztecs when they moved to Orlando and USL, and then it really is a totally different club. Like the funny thing is talking to some of the supporters who have been supporters since day one of MLS, like, a lot of them don't get why the old fans don't like the Rowdies. Like, they don't understand it, because they weren't there for like some of the origins of this, when it was, you know, two lower division clubs in different leagues that were rarely playing, but often talking about each other or whatever. It's kind of interesting. And, you know, and we're at a point where this is a game that's going to happen maybe in preseason and maybe in an Open Cup. Especially if you have a very cringy draw on streamed online. God, don't get on that. Man, it was just painful. But we've got to figure out something. And it's one of the things, like, we're sitting here saying we need to figure out something to make the Miami ones more significant, but you can't figure it out. It has to happen organically. Like, there's no recipe for it. You talk about how, you know, it's hard to, you know, you can't have a rivalry with Red Bulls too. No, but I sure as hell hate them a lot more than I hate Miami.
Yeah. So as far as Orlando goes, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is that it was never just about proximity. You know, the rivalry between the two clubs, it was nothing anywhere close to that. It was, and it had to do with the fact that, you know, the Tampa Bay Rowdies got started in 2010. That was our first year. Orlando got started the year after that in 2011, and then they won their championship in 2011. And then the Rowdies turned around and won our championship in 2012. So you've got two clubs down the street, one at Division II, one at Division III, right smack dab in the middle of this massive lower division civil war between organizations that are all fighting just for their mere existence at the time. All of that came together to create what that rivalry was about. It was never just about the local soccer club. It was about who was a better level of soccer, who controlled the politics of all of that soccer, because that there was so much riding on those games for what organization was better, because those games were being used as barometers for future ownership groups.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was a monumental thing back then. And it's funny because it's not even really that long ago. I mean, we say 8 years ago as if it's like this massive amount of time. I mean, that's nothing. You know, 8, 9 years ago, like, that, it was an incredible clash of titans. And I'm willing to use the term for what was going on, especially when you look at the fact that, like, at the same time all of this is happening, Orlando has an ownership group in place that they start deciding that they're going to start pursuing, like, Major League Soccer. And at the same time, we're looking at an ownership group, and unbeknownst to most of us, like, in the stands, we were on the verge of folding.
Right? Yeah, we're so like titles and bouncing checks.
Yeah, we're like literally fighting for our lives and trying to carry Second Division's mantle of sorts and the NASL's mantle. I mean, it was just like there was so much riding on that. And unfortunately, the matches didn't go our way. A lot of those were one-goal games that were just like really stupid results. Like, most of those matches were dumb. In terms of the final scoring, some of those matches were stupid because we had terrible lineups. I'll never forget the first game it was the first game that inadvertently we played against them was the Disney preseason tournament, when both teams happened to finish last place in their respective groups, and we got thrown against each other in the fourth place match just by happenstance. And then we put out a roster for that game. The 11 players on the field, I think only three of them became starters for more than half the games that year. Like, it was an awful team that we put on the field, and that was how it started. The famous run of results, if you're an Orlando fan. Like, it was really, really frustrating. And then, of course, like, it all encapsulated, like, the very last thing was the Open Cup match, the 4-1 result at the Seminole Soccer Complex. And that was a year we were terrible. Like, our coach got, you know, let go by the end of the year, or after the end of that year. Like, we went through a whole roster rebuild. Everything started back forward again. So, like by the end of that, we went into a pretty solid rebuilding phase for the next, like, three, four seasons until the 2017 USL season, when we joined USL and made a name of things and made a run of things again. You know, that was, it meant so much just going on around it. And then, of course, how everything ended. You know, the game at Al Lang Stadium, when there were arrests made, there were fights in the stands. You know, there was a massive amount of disrespect just
being
shown.
There were teenagers punched in the face. There were parts of the stadium set on fire.
Stuff was stolen. Yeah, I mean, there was plenty of stuff stolen at that night. And, you know, it's like, you know, just the way things ended, like, it never felt settled to begin with.
Well, and that, this just randomly popped in my head talking about stuff being stolen.
There you go.
Remember, it was either a trip to Fort Lauderdale or Jacksonville, but remember getting on the bus at Al Lang to go to one of those games and coming back and all the Rowdies magnets and everyone's cars had been taken because the Purple fans knew that, like, you know, cause it was kind of out there publicly where we were parking for buses, and they, like, literally some of them drove across from I-4 to come just rip crap off our cars. There's a, there's so much in this rivalry that's off the field. That's nothing soccer related at all. There is an alternate universe out there where Tampa Bay Orlando is actually the Cascadia of American soccer.
Yes.
And I'd love to visit that once just to see how that would have played out.
Well, we get our, we get a good run of it next week. That's for certain. I am so excited about this.
I am too. I have revived my frequently posted tattoo bet. Rowdy's advanced to the next round. There will be a ceremonial not ceremonial. It'll actually happen. There'll be a commemorative inking coming up with the. I have a design in mind for it already. I just need them to get the goals. They don't need us. Like these guys want to win a game because they're playing a game. They want to win a game because it's the cup and they want to advance. Neil's going to have these guys ready to play Orlando because of what it's going to mean to the fans who are traveling across for the game. I want that result. I really do. I just mostly to me because I want to advance in the cup, but also to get that win in the competitive game in their house would just be fantastic. While we're stuck in like the wedge corner of the stadium.
I will say this. I'm actually, when I found out that we were actually in the proper like away section for Exploria, I was actually excited by that. Cause that was
I absolutely love it. Like I saw some people complaining, oh, they're going to limit the seats. They're going to stick us there. We would have done the exact same thing in that situation. We would have put them, we wouldn't have even put them in the stand. We would have put that bleacher back up and sold 25 tickets to them. And they would have been in there shirtless, throwing smoke bombs and cussing at little children like they did in the OCB opener.
Well, like that also,
that's how it is. That's how this goes. That's what you do.
And it was interesting because it also showed like, I guess how much interest that they were getting from their own fan base about attending this match was, remember the OCB games, we were right behind goal almost. We were on the lower level opposite from the Orlando supporters sections. And, we were one section removed over from but basically being directly behind goal. So, of course, it was great like that, especially the second goal of the 2-0 game, the final match that we played there, it was like the very end of the game, like 88th minute or something like that. When we got a finishing touch, happened right in front of us. It was a great night. That was a great game. It's a fun time. The only disappointing thing was we were allowed to be down there because like nobody wanted to go to that game from the city of Orlando.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
Like it felt it was cool to be there, but at the same time it was like this only exists because like, it's OCB, and Orlando fans don't give a crap about OCB. Which, I mean, why would you? It's a B team. I mean, I don't necessarily know if I blame them a whole lot. OCB is garbage. Yeah. That's what it is. So
my favorite takeaway from that match was being in, because I was in the press box for that one, covering it. I was sitting next to Kardik, and we were watching it. And then when seven people started the P word chant. Us sitting like kind of 5 feet away from some of their front office staff who just said, here it goes. This is why we hate our fans. And I was like, hey, cool. So do we. Good job. Welcome. Thanks for the press box spread. It was very nice. Actually who I came out of that game hating the most was freaking Tony Pulis.
Oh.
Cause we go to the post game press conference where he just whined and whined and whined about the players are flopping. Neil's got them very well trained. They know how to get to the refs. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up, you piece of crap.
Yes. That was that man's interesting. That's for certain. I know loosely. I've heard from a couple different places that it's like, it's incessant, and it. Ugh. I was more upset about losing to an Anthony Pulis team than I was losing to Miami. Like I didn't even care it was Miami so much as like the fact that it was Anthony Pulis this weekend. That was the part that sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel about him the way Dan feels about, what's his face, Marcina in San Antonio.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, I just can't stand the guy. I just can't. Like, when that hire was announced, I was like, okay, this is going to spice it up. It's not. It's not. He's not, like, you know, he had that little run in St. Louis, but he's just – They were crap when he was there too. He's not a good coach. The guy who has, you got a guy like Neil who's played for years, comes across to the United States, plays, is kind of grinding it out or you know, having some incredible success at this level. By the way, still out of town, but we'll be back on Friday. Got the info today, doing his coaching stuff in Scotland, and then you got a guy like Tony Pulis who is literally coasting on his dad's name. Is just actual trash, is just been terrible everywhere he's gone. But he's so annoying. Like, I don't think you've hopped on the F1 bandwagon like a lot of people have. I have. Listening to him in a post-game press conference is like listening to Max Verstappen whining about what everyone else is doing when there's a safety car. How'd he catch up? He's going too fast. That's not right. Oh, my car. Shut up. Shut up, dickhead. I'm just letting everything out tonight.
Oh, man. Good times.
Good times. Go to hell, Tony Pulis. All right. go get a ticket. They're going fast. Get on the bus. Get the look, it's $40. You can ride the bus over, go into the game. Have a blast being one of the most hated people in the stadium and get back home and not have to sit behind the wheel yourself. This is perfect. This is beautiful.
Yeah.
You could see me in a romper.
Yeah. Yeah, and I will say this. Get the tickets for the bus because if – I will say this. I am aware that there are other group transportation options. If the bus gets full, there are backup options for other carpooling availability. So get it filled. Do not be afraid that you're going to take a spot from somebody else or, you know, hey, if I've got multiple ways of getting there. I actually, at the moment, have three different ways of getting over there at the moment. I'm probably doing the charter, but yeah, I mean, 100%. If you are going to go, if you have the ability to go, do not hesitate to get a ticket for the charter bus. If that's what you want to do, get it done. Do it. Their backup options will potentially exist. Those folks can handle themselves. It's fine. Get the ticket for the charter bus. Do it now. Get it filled.
Even if you're not sure, when the Open Cup tickets came out and they're like $15, I said, I'm buying one. I'm like 75% sure I'm going, but I'm buying one just in case. You know what? If I can't go, someone will buy the ticket. Get a bus ticket. If you can't go, someone will take it off your hands. Don't worry.
Yep. Yep. Definitely get that. Get those done. I know they're selling fast too. So make sure if you're going to go and you need the help, definitely go and get that charter bus ticket as well.
And go to hell, Tony Pulis.
Yes.
I guess. Tulsa.
Tulsa.
We're playing Tulsa. Before we do that. So,
okay.
Speaking of getting on the bus, another bus that you should get on is Taco Bus. Taco Bus proudly delivers a healthy, fresh, authentic Mexican taste experience to our Florida fans. Except the ones on the other end of I-4. Just one bite of a burrito, tostada, or quesadilla, and your taste buds will be singing traditional Mexican folk songs while Orlando fans boo and throw bottles at you. Visit us today at one of our 11 locations, and remember to keep it Chido. I'm kind of proud. I just came up at the off top of my head about the whole bus thing right there. I'm quite proud of that one. So we talked about the Miami game. We talked about next week's game in Orlando. I said a lot of things about Tony Pulis that I don't take back. Some scores from last week, other scores around the league. Apparently there are other games going on in American soccer besides us playing Orlando. Not everyone's paying attention to that game because, well, we don't all make good choices. Tulsa, this week's opponent, lost 3-4 to Pittsburgh in Tulsa. Atlanta dropped 0-4 to Detroit City. Detroit's on a nice little run right now. RGV lost to Indy, giving Indy their first win of the season, 2-1. San Diego defeated Charleston 4-1. Charleston does not look good so far. I kind of have too much belief that this is going to, that this will last. I think they'll come back into it at some point, but they have gotten off to a rough start. Loudoun has somewhat returned to reality, lost 2-0 to Louisville, not to be unexpected. Birmingham 2-1 over Hartford. I'm kind of really surprised by Hartford right now. They've only played 3 games, but they've lost 2. They've drawn 1. They're bottom of the table right now. So the table currently, as it stands, Louisville, 4 wins and 2 draws with 14 points. Pittsburgh, 4 wins and 1 draw at 13 points. Tulsa, this week's opponent, 3 wins, 3 losses. It's all or nothing for them, 9 points. The Rowdies also on 9 points with 2 wins and 3 draws, also that 1 loss. Still with a better goal differential than Tulsa. Detroit, 2 wins, 1 loss, and 2 draws. Miami, off that win, jumps out of the non-playoff spots into playoff contention. 2 wins, 2 losses, and a draw. Same as Loudoun, 2 wins, 2 losses, and a draw. Your teams outside the playoffs right now. Memphis, not totally surprising. Atlanta, not totally surprising. Indy, I think they're going to get better. I'm not surprised they're having a rough time right now. Birmingham, kind of a little surprising, the slow start they've gotten off to. Charleston, maybe a little surprising. Red Bull, too, not surprised. Hartford, I wouldn't have picked them for bottom of the table, but they've also only played 3 games. We'll see. And I believe, if I'm correct, I believe, is Tulsa playing right now, too?
Well, keep in mind, Hartford's played 4 games. On tonight.
Oh, I didn't update something on the chart right now. No, Oakland and San Diego are playing tonight at 10. Detroit and Birmingham play on Friday, along with Red Bulls and RGV. I had it in my head for some reason that Tulsa was playing tonight, but that's not the case. So, speaking of Tulsa, head coach Michael Nassian took them to the playoffs last year, where the Rowdies dumped them out 6-2 in the Eastern Conference quarterfinals. Like we just said, they lost their most recent game 3-4 to Pittsburgh. They are led by J.J. Williams and Rodrigo da Costa with 3 goals apiece. Williams also has 13 shots to lead the team. 2 assists from Petar Kuik, and I probably just mangled that. The Rowdies are going to mangle them on the weekend, so it's fine. Dario Suarez has created 9 chances. Sean Lewis has 13 saves and 1 clean sheet, and they don't currently have any discipline issues. They're pretty good. They're sitting right now 3rd in the table, equal on points with Tampa Bay. But as wins is the top tiebreaker instead of goal difference, they are currently ahead of the Rowdies because they have 3 wins versus the Rowdies 2, though the Rowdies own a 4-1 advantage in goal difference. What are you looking to see out of the Rowdies this weekend against Tulsa? I mean, we tweeted that we're going to bounce back, so we better do it. Don't want to not bounce back when you've tweeted it.
Right. Okay, so one of the things about Tulsa going into this match, because Tulsa, I think, was supposed to play, they were supposed to play a game tonight, the game against Memphis, but there's that massive, like, weather system going through the country right now with a lot of tornadoes, so they were like, yeah, let's not do that. The past couple of games going into this, now keep in mind, that also means that Tulsa's going to actually get a full week's rest going into this match, compared to what it would have been normally. They've scored 7 goals in their last 3 games. And more importantly, they've scored 3 goals in each of their last 2 games. A 3-2 victory over New York Red Bulls 2 and a 4-3 loss to Pittsburgh Riverhounds. Now, granted, they've lost 2 of their last 3 in that same token, but goal scoring for them is a thing right now. And I think that this is another big test to show where we are defensively, is being able to take a team that's hot on offense and being able to cool them down. Because defense ultimately is what wins you championships. And I know that, like, we've had a great run of results to start the year. You know, only one loss in six games. I'll take that all day. And a lot of that's because Connor Antley's been able to step up into a role that he wasn't necessarily going to be asked to do this year and has done a very admirable job the whole year. This is another one of those moments, those situations, to get another notch on your belt of another successful outing. Because, like, Wednesday night is not going to be easy. Wednesday night against Orlando, that's probably going to be potentially, like, the hardest game you play all year. Assuming we don't move on to the next round. That'll be the hardest game. So, you know, having a great result defensively this weekend, I think, is the most important thing.
The biggest issue is, it feels like to me, and I shouldn't say feels like it's directly obvious on the scoreboard, we're not scoring goals right now. And going back to people wondering last week about Seba not getting the start, here we are, what, six games into the season. Seba hasn't gotten on the score sheet yet. I mean, we haven't had a chance for a penalty, which is where he tends to flourish, but he does score plenty from open play as well, too. He's had a couple opportunities and hasn't been able to do it. I'm not even going to say, like, because I'm sure someone else will, or some people are thinking it, that it's, you know, the pressure of the record, the wrist off record. I don't think that's on his mind. It's three goals. It's going to happen at some point, but he just hasn't gotten that first one yet. And when he does, I think a bunch of them are going to come, because we've seen that in the past. And we've seen these dry state, these, you know, these dry runs from not just individual players, but the team as well. Yeah, we should be able to beat Miami if we give up one goal, is my feeling. We should be able to go into Tulsa, limit them, and score some goals, but we have not gotten the goals yet. And there's too many guys up front. Like, Lacava, hot streak for a while, was tied and maybe is, you know, is still up there in the conversation for Golden Boot, but didn't happen in the last game. Like, I'm, again, not hitting the panic button, but starting to get a little bit nervous about the lack of goal production. Like, we know it's going to happen at some point. The idea is to keep that streak as low as possible and get out of it. Hopefully we're going to be able to.
I think, okay, so on the goal scoring side of things, you have one of the hottest strikers to start the season. He needs to be on the field. And I'm sorry, like, I don't understand a scenario where he isn't on the field at this point to start a match. Not with the way that he has started this year. It just, at this point, it doesn't even make sense to not have him in the starting 11. And I think that's my starting point. Like, if I'm seeing the lineup for this weekend, and assuming it's not, like, injury-related, right? Like, if it's injury-related, it is what it is. That's, offensively speaking, that's the one thing I'm looking for more than anything else. I want to see Lacava's name in the starting 11 if he's healthy. So, because I think that's right now, you go with the hot hand, he's the hot hand, other players can build off of that. I think that potentially solves a lot of your problems. So we'll have to see how that goes. That's where my mind immediately goes to. There's also a question about, you know, if we end up getting, like, a 2-0 lead or something like that against Tulsa, use all five substitutions. Rotate as many of those guys out as you can to make sure you've got as fresh as legs as possible for Wednesday night. You know, like, that's the other half of the equation. So, yeah, I definitely, that's a couple things to look at. And you know what? The other thing, too, if it's 1-1 and it's, like, late in the game, I don't care. Sub everybody out anyways. Just settle for the draw. Who gives a crap? Get everybody rested for Wednesday. Like, at this point, I don't even know if I really even care about 3 points. If it's not going to be easy to get, like, you know, it is what it is. Like, there's almost a degree where that almost makes sense. So, definitely some things to look at for this weekend. I'm going to throw out a question here for you that Kevin Vicario has just asked us. And that is the Wednesday night match.
Get out there.
The Wednesday night match. Would you start Ryko Arozarena or CJ Cochran in net?
CJ Cochran.
I 100% agree with you. I'm a CJ Cochran fan at this point. I have loved everything that he has done. And if he's getting the starting minutes, there's a reason for it, because we can't see practice every single day. If he's getting the starting minutes, it's for a reason. And they think that they see something, like Stuart Dobson thinks he sees something better in him for a full 90 over Ryko. I'm going to take his word for it, because I'm not in the camp every single morning. So, right. Yeah.
I'm always of the mind that, yeah, you rotate some of your outfield players. You rotate your strikers. You try and keep hot feet on the field, but also get guys some minutes to get warmed up. But when you've got a hot keeper, you ride the hot keeper. Keep the cock blocker out there and just let him do his thing.
Oh, man. Did I ever tell you how much I hate that nickname? It's hilarious, but I also hate it.
I love it. I love it. Coming from someone with a last name that tends to engender humor, I'm sure he is probably not super fond of it. But look, I love it. Well, welcome to the club, CJ. Welcome. You, me, someone named Johnson, me, him, and Tate Johnson, get on out here, and we're just gonna enjoy this run together.
Are you saying it's gonna be you're gonna recreate the Cox and Deldo in the box for all of you?
Not coming. I don't want to lose my ticket on the bus.
For all of you old school Rowdies fans, I just want to remind you all: Cox and Deldo in the box. You're welcome. You're welcome.
No relation. No relation.
It's all good.
Love you, Raphael. All right. It's 9:30. We've ranted long enough. We will not be live next week because we will be at the game, but perhaps, and I'm going to be out kind of late on Thursday. Perhaps we may be able to record something. We'll have to talk to Dan, see what his schedule's like. Record something on Friday or something, and put it out there as a podcast, just not live. We'll see. Perhaps I'll bring some audio recording equipment with me on the bus and into the stadium, and we'll see if we can get some fan reactions, providing it'll be something we want to relive.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. We're not in a rush to do anything specific, so.
I still got to go ahead and file for a day off, so we'll take care of that first.
Gosh, good. Get on that, man. I took the week off like several months, like what, 2 months ago? I took the whole week off.
Yeah, I have half a school year's worth of sick days banked up and a flex day that cannot be used on Mondays or Fridays to cash in. So it won't be a problem.
There you go.
It's not. I just got to click the buttons in the online program to do that.
See, I took a full week off because I have some building and painting to do. So it's like got my new 40K stuff, and I've got hobby stuff to do all week. It's gonna be great.
But actually, you have some burning, destroying, wrecking, and killing to do.
Yes.
Instead. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Let's get out of here so people can go buy their tickets, and see you guys on Saturday. And if I don't see you there, I will see you on the bus.
Yeah. All right. I don't want to do score predictions for the Orlando match. I don't want to. Just because that's such a wild card of event. But let's do a quick score prediction. None of us got it right for this past weekend's match. But let's do a score prediction for FC Tulsa. What do you think happens this weekend, Mr. Cox?
So on one hand, I think we find our shooting boots again, and I think we score two goals. But I also think that Tulsa has had a pretty effective offense and is probably got a little bit of confidence right now. And I think this ends up as a 2-2 draw.
All right. on the flip side, I kind of almost went like a caveat to my vote. Like, if Lakava's not in the starting 11, I think we lose 1-0. If he is in the starting 11, I think we draw 1-1. So.
Okay.
That's my prediction, and everybody just has to deal with it. Ha 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 ha. Lol. All right. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining in and listening tonight, whether you're listening on the podcast later or listening to us live here on the air on Radio St. Pete Online. Either way, we appreciate you very much. Thank you as well to Wolfface for the great introduction music, Radio St. Pete Online for our hosting platform, Shamrock Pub, and to Corrigan's for our live locations. Please share, subscribe, rate, and review this show so that way everybody in the Rowdies fan base can get a chance to listen to what we do all year round as your best place to get Rowdies news and opinions. If you want to take that dedication to the next level, Patreon is the best place to do that, starting from as little as $1 a month. You can help support the show, help contribute to the cost of running this little podcast of ours. If you want to take that even further, you can go all the way up to like $10 a level. It's an executive producer level. You get your name shouted out just like Mike Pendleton tonight. As well, thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves for your group or team at roughneckscarves.com. And if you are tired of the same old uniforms and cookie-cutter generic templates from Nike and Adidas, and you're looking for a unique, something completely custom-drawn for your youth club, a Sunday league squad, maybe an adult, or even if you're listening and you're going to be starting a pro team, Icarus FC can help you create the kit of your dreams at an affordable price. Let them help you design your new custom kit today at IcarusFC.com. All right, everybody. We have a heck of a week. We're going to see you all this weekend. And then we better see you on Wednesday of next week.
Steven, assuming that that game does not go to extra time next Wednesday, right about now, we're all going to be feeling some kind of way.
Oh, man. Pucker factor times 1,000.
I don't know how I'm going to, it's supposed to arrive tomorrow and I'm going to, do a little test drive, but I don't know how I'm going to be able to pucker in a romper. We're going to see.
Man, oh man. All right, everybody. Well, we will see you all this weekend. We will see you guys in Orlando next week, and we will be back definitely on the air in 2 weeks. Of course, as well, before the home match against FC Tulsa, we will be on the pregame show live on twitch.tv/RowdiesGG. Please make sure you're listening and watching us. And as a final little salutation, Russian warship, go F yourself. Slava Ukraini. Have a great night, everyone, and we'll see you around.
Orlando Stadium, go F yourself. Tony Pulis, go F yourself.
The rowdies are kicking the grass.